Greetings, everyone. This is Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, here reporting for naturalnews.com. And as you might be able to hear in the background, I am in the rainforest of southern Ecuador, high in the Andes Mountains. And I'm recording a commentary here for you with the natural sounds of the rainforest in the background. And I'm not joking. This is not some off-the-shelf recording. I'm actually in a bamboo rainforest here. It's raining, so I'm under some shelter right now. And you can hear some of the live birds and frogs and different insects in the background. Here, let me give you about 10 seconds of that so you can take it in. Here you go. Yeah, that's what's happening right here, just a few feet from where I'm doing this recording, and unfortunately, this recording is about a topic that is not so pleasant. I'm here to talk to you today about the beef slaughterhouse scandal that was discovered in California. This is with the Westland Meat Packing Company. It's one of many slaughterhouses that operate in the United States, excuse me. And these companies are in the business of torturing and murdering cows. Anything they can do to get the meat off of those cows. You see, there's a rule that the USDA has. It says you can't take what's called a non-ambulatory cow and put it into the food supply. And that rule is designed to protect American consumers because non-ambulatory cows, meaning cows that can't walk, are often diseased. I mean, why else would they not be able to walk? And what the USDA is not telling you, and what the beef industry doesn't want you to know, is that most of the time, these diseased cows have mad cow disease. And mad cow disease, of course, is a neurological disorder. It's not a parasite or bacteria or even a virus. It's actually a prion. It's what's called a folded protein. And it turns nervous systems into mush. It actually turns a working, functioning brain into a pile of nervous system gel that doesn't function anymore. And if a little bit of this leaks out of the cow's carcass and gets into the meat, then it can get mixed into literally thousands of different hamburgers or hot dogs, or other processed meats. I mean, one cow can be in thousands of different products. They say that one hamburger can have parts from hundreds or even thousands of different cows. So all of this gets mixed together, including potentially the spinal fluid or some brain matter from the carcasses of these cows. And that gets made into the hamburgers, the taco meat, the soup meat, the processed meat, the beef jerky, and, of course, school lunch program meat, not to mention dog food, which is even one grade below all of that. Well, this particular slaughterhouse in California was caught on camera, secret videos put out by the Humane Society, showing the incredible torture that was being done to these cows. And I'm not going to describe it all because it's too sad, it's too disturbing, but let's just say they did everything in their power to try to get these cows into the processing lines. They use forklifts and they use cattle prods and they use all kinds of other extremely cruel and inhumane methods to try to get those cows into the processing lines, which would put them into the human food supply. And they did. They successfully did that on their part. They got these cows into the processing lines and they went into the human food supply. And I think it's an estimated 37 million pounds of that of beef from that same plant went to school lunch programs around the country, including school lunches in the state of New York. Well, so what happens there? Of course, school children eat the beef, right? And so they are potentially exposed to mad cow disease. Now, it's important to know that mad cow disease is not destroyed by cooking. So you can cook that contaminated meat all you want. It does not destroy mad cow disease. If you eat a cooked hamburger that was contaminated with that spinal fluid, you can get mad cow disease the same as if it were raw meat. So don't think that cooking the meat makes it safe from this particular disease. And when these school children eat this beef, this contaminated beef, they can begin to show signs of nervous system malfunction. We have a lot of behavioral disorders in this country. We have Alzheimer's disease skyrocketing among the elderly. And we also have, of course, violence among young people happening more and more. And I'll talk about the link between beef and violence here in a few minutes. But for now, it's just important to know that people can be exposed to mad cow disease. Now, does mad cow disease infect humans? Sure it does. You can get the human form of mad cow disease, which is called CJD. Now, mainstream medicine doesn't know anything about CJD, not much anyway. They're kind of mystified by it, just like they're mystified by diabetes and mystified by cancer. They're not too bright when it comes to disease, and they don't know what CJD is either. But it's actually just the human form of mad cow disease. You can get it from eating wild deer, for example, that are infected with mad cow disease. You can also get it from eating these infected cows that were pushed into the slaughterhouse, just as we saw on these secret videos. And if you have the courage and the stomach for it, and I don't recommend that you do this, but if you do and you want to see the videos, go to the Humane Society's website and you can see some pictures, and you can even find the video on that website. I do not personally wish to view those videos because I just have too much, well, I have a lot of compassion for these animals, and I wish that other human beings would share that same level of compassion. Cows are mammals. They have memories, they have consciousness, they have awareness, they have families, children, parents. I mean, I've been around cows. My grandfather was a cattle rancher, and even though he too was slaughtering the cows for food consumption, he at least raised them in a field where they ate fresh grass. They had fresh air, clean water, free movement. Truly, truly healthy cows. And I spent quite a bit of time around cows in my youth. That was way before I even knew anything about nutrition or red meat or the health impacts or the environmental impacts or any of these other things. So I was oblivious to all of that back then, and I ate a lot of meat in those days. I used to eat beef all the time, and it always kind of disturbed me to think that, hey, these cows look really nice to me. Why are we eating them? Why do we need to do that? But, you know, when you're a kid, you don't really question things as much as you do, hopefully, when you're an adult. So I just went along with it and ate beef for many, many years, even while coming to understand cows as living, breathing creatures. I mean, we actually had names for the cows, and we had names for the young when they would give birth. And if you've never seen a cow give birth, you should do that. It gives you a whole new appreciation for life, the creation of life. Watching a cow give birth is an experience you will never, ever forget. And it's a beautiful experience, too. At some level, you may think, well, gee, it's gross, you know, just like a human birth, you may think, gee, it's gross. But behind all that, of course, it's the miracle of life happening right in front of you. And it really gives you an appreciation for the complexity of the experiences and the consciousness of other mammals. Because cows are mammals just like we are. I mean, we give live birth to our children, and they nurse from mother's milk. And cows work the same way. They give live birth, and their children nurse from them, and they have very strong relationships with their young. And they have very strong relationships with their family members. And so I believe it is extremely cruel and unethical not only to treat cows with the kind of cruelty that was observed in these videos, but even to just use cows as a food source. I think that's cruel. I think that mammals should never be used as a food source. And I don't eat meat from mammals. I do eat some fish, and I think in time I will probably be able to let that go as well. But I choose fish because I know that they're of much lower intelligence, far less complex mental function. Although I do understand that fish feel pain. And that, I mean, that's been proven in certain studies. We know that fish are, in fact, aware at some level of consciousness, but I do know that they are, of course, at a lower level of consciousness than a cow. And if I have to eat meat in order to sustain my own tissues and my own body so that I can accomplish the things that are important in my life, I'm definitely going to choose to eat it from an animal of far lower awareness, lower consciousness, not higher consciousness. So that's one reason why I avoid eating mammals, which includes cows and pigs and sheep and dogs, of course, all of those animals. And it's funny, a lot of people think, well, gee, it would be crazy to eat a horse or to eat a dog. We would never eat a dog. That would be cruel. Or we would never eat a horse. How cruel is that? Well, there's no difference between eating a horse and eating a cow. Horses and cows have almost the exact same intelligence. I know that some horse owners out there might disagree and say, well, my horse is smarter than the cow. That's because you trained your horse. If you train the cow is very similar to the horse. Cows seem stupid to people because no one teaches them anything. Just like if you take a dog and teach him nothing, he doesn't know much. Well, horses get a lot of good treatment and good training and a lot of time and effort put into them, so they seem a lot more intelligent. But in reality, they're very similar intelligence. In fact, the size of the brain of a cow and a horse is very, very similar. In fact, the entire anatomy is very similar. So when people say, well, gee, I want to eat cows, I say, well, why don't you eat horses? You know, I like to get people to question their reality, to ask these important questions, look at things from a different point of view. Why don't you eat a horse? They say, well, that would be cruel. But eating a cow is not cruel? And they say, yeah, that's fine. And the only reason they can say that, and by the way, if you eat cows, this is undoubtedly true for you. The only reason you can say that is because you've never been to a slaughterhouse. You've never actually met your meat, so to speak. You've never seen what really happens back there. If you did, you'd give it up immediately. There's no way that a conscious, compassionate, intelligent human being can observe what happens in a slaughterhouse and continue to eat that meat. There's no way. The only way that humans can consume beef products today and pork products is because they are able to dissociate from the animal. They don't even call cow meat cow meat. They just call it beef. It's a completely different word. And then pig products, of course, are not called pig. They're called pork. And then they're reshaped into different isolated food names that further distance the food item from the animal from which it came. For example, sausage or bacon. If you say the word bacon, it doesn't bring to mind, it doesn't invoke an animal. Bacon, in the minds of most consumers, is something all by itself. It's completely isolated from its source. So when people talk about bacon, you know, let's cook up some bacon for breakfast, they don't say, let's eat pig flesh. Even though that would be the accurate statement. So even through their own language, and of course language reflects thoughts and ideas, but through their language, they distance themselves from the reality of where that meat comes from. And even if they started to use the language of, say, let's have pig rib meat for breakfast, or let's have cow flesh for lunch between two slices of bread, even then, they would still be distanced from the reality of how those animals are treated. So if you look at how those animals are really treated in the slaughterhouses, that's another aspect of that reality that consumers definitely do not want to acknowledge. By the way, did you notice the rain in the background here has really picked up? Yeah, it's really coming down. You gotta love South America. All kinds of abundance down here. You've got incredible plant life, huge biodiversity. You've got medicinal plants galore. And of course, it's legal to use all the medicinal plants down here, where it's not in the United States. You've got sunshine, clean air, clean water, rich soil, all kinds of things. I'll talk about South America later. I'll do a whole session on that. But if you're looking for a place to live, you might want to start looking south if you're not already there. All right, getting back to the cow issue, let's talk about the correlation between meat consumption and human emotions. What you see in meat eaters, especially beef eaters, is a lot of internal anger, fear, and violence. Just look around. Pick 10 people that you know who eat a lot of meat and rate their level of emotional stability, anger, fear, violence. And then take 10 people who are vegetarians or vegans and do that same exercise. Then compare those two groups of 10. You'll find an amazing correlation. All the people who eat plant-based diets, vegetarians and vegans, are nonviolent. They're not angry. They don't live in fear. They don't support war and violence. They don't treat others inhumanely. They probably love animals. And I don't mean love to eat them. I mean love to have them around. They probably have pets, maybe horses, maybe dogs. And they treat other living beings with compassion and with ethics. That's the vegans and the vegetarians, or the plant-based diet people like me. And of course, I'm not 100% plant-based diet, like I mentioned, but I'm mostly plant-based diet. Now compare that to the meat eaters, which is what I used to be. Meat eaters are violent, fearful. They support war. They might own a lot of guns and like to use them. They might go out hunting just so they can kill an animal and put its trophy on their wall. That's a classic behavior of meat-eating people. They support all kinds of violent acts by society. For example, they typically support the death sentence. And they also think that animals can be treated cruelly without any real consequences. They don't believe in animal rights. They don't believe that animals really have to be taken care of. They just kind of believe that humans can destroy and kill and torture and maim whatever they want. Even other humans, by the way. You see, their lack of compassion doesn't stop with animals. It also extends into other people. That's why people who eat a lot of beef and red meat also support war. They have no problem with the U.S. invading other countries and bombing civilians and killing tens of thousands of people. They have no problem with it at all, as long as they can eat their steak and say, oh, we're fighting for freedom. And that's very characteristic of meat eaters. Well, once you realize this correlation, you might say, well, why? What's behind it? How can meat consumption be correlated with such violence? Well, the answer is that tissues, now I know you may not believe this statement, but hear me out, okay? I'm going to explain this. Tissues store emotions. Tissues store emotions. Now, how do you know this is true? Well, if you go onto Google and you search around for organ transplant recipients, you'll find that there are many recipients who actually experience the emotions of their organ donors. There are recipients of heart transplants and liver transplants, for example, who actually experience the memories of the donor, who has long since passed away, obviously. They experience the memories, the moods. They actually have flashbacks sometimes from the other person. Now, modern medical science tends to dismiss these reports because they don't understand them. It doesn't fit the model of what they understand to be true. So they just say, you're just imagining things. In reality, there are many people who experience this. It's because the tissues themselves, the organs, actually store energy. They store vibration. They store emotions. And when you take a heart out of one person and you put it into another person, you begin to unleash the emotional energy that was in that original heart organ. And that's why the recipient then begins to experience those emotions all over again. This is also why, by the way, there are so many emotions tied to the heart. Right? What is Valentine's Day? The symbol is the heart. The heart stands for love. It's because love can actually be stored physically in the heart organ. I should say energetically inside the physical organ. It's an energetic vibration, but it's imprinted in the tissues. That's why we say things like, oh, I'm saying this from my heart. There's so many English idioms and sayings that use the heart to express emotion. Well, this is no coincidence. It's because throughout human civilization, observers have consistently noted that the heart is one source of emotional energy. But the truth is, all the tissues and organs in your body also store emotional energy. Your liver, your skin, your muscles, and flesh. Even your blood stores emotional energy. And if you look back at certain ancient civilizations, like, well, here in South America, we have Mayan cultures and Incan cultures. There's Aztec north of here. There's American Indian cultures, of course. Many of these cultures believed in consuming the organs of animals they killed for certain reasons, to give themselves the spirit of that animal, for example. And this, again, was not superstition. This has a very valid basis in reality, that when you eat the flesh of another animal or another being, I mean, I suppose it could be a person too, but whatever you eat the flesh from, you begin to assimilate that same emotional energy. Does that make sense now? You see it in organ transplants. You've seen it throughout human history. You see it in modern use of language. We know that energy is stored in organs. And when you eat those organs or the flesh of other animals, you will assimilate whatever energies, whatever emotions that were imprinted in those tissues. Now, let's get back to the slaughterhouse. What emotions do you think are imprinted in the cows and the pigs as they're being processed in the slaughterhouse? Extreme fear, terror even, violence being committed against them, in many cases while they're still alive. All of this emotional energy gets imprinted in their tissues. That meat becomes contaminated with bad energy. I mean, it may pass a USDA inspection. It's not contaminated with a bacteria. But they don't test for emotional energy. They don't even know it exists. That meat is contaminated with violence. It's contaminated with terror, with fear, with anger, or with hopelessness. And now, do you think it's a coincidence that the people in America today who are consuming these meat products also share those same emotions? They are violent. They are full of hopelessness. They are angry. They are fearful. And they keep eating more meat. Do you think that's a coincidence? Why does America support so much war? Why are our schools full of such violence? Why is there so much violence on the streets of America? Why is there so much fear? Why can fear be so easily invoked by the president whenever he wants the population to support some other ridiculous war effort? Why are all these emotions so prevalent in American society? It's very clear to me and to others who are holistically aware, let's say, that much of this comes from the food. And the meat is primarily responsible for that. And it's the angry meat, it's the fearful meat, it's the violence in the meat, the contamination of meat with bad energy. And by the way, I hate to even utter these words, especially in a place where I am right now, this pristine environment in the rainforest. I hate to even utter some of these words. I'd rather be uttering words like abundance and hope and creation, creativity. And, you know, these positive words, healing, these are the kinds of words I'd rather be talking about right now, but sometimes these issues demand our attention. And I feel it is important to help spread the word to make people aware of these links between the energetically contaminated meats that you're consuming and your own state of mind, your own emotional state as well. Because they go hand in hand. Okay, with that said, you might wonder, well, gee, what can I do? What can I do to not expose myself to that kind of violent behavior or that kind of violent energy? How can I protect myself and my family from energetically contaminated meat? And the answer is really in two parts. The first part is, don't eat mammals. Pretty simple, actually. Don't eat cows. Don't support that industry. Don't support that violence and that torture and that cruelty against animals. Don't eat meat. Don't buy meat. And especially don't buy it from mammals. Red meat? Come on. Aren't we past that yet in our society? And the second thing you can do is, if for some reason you still want to eat meat, then at least go with cruelty-free meat. Now, is there actually such a thing? I don't think so, because I think you gotta still kill the animal to eat it, right? So there's some level of violence involved somewhere along the line. There's no such thing as a cow that was happily killed for its meat. So all these free-range meat products have pictures of happy, happy cows on the labels. Well, in reality, those should be pictures of dead cows, shouldn't they? I mean, cows with their throats slit. And let's be honest, the meat is not taken from living cows. It's not like the cow comes in from the field frolicking along, and then someone takes a knife and takes a big chunk of steak out of the cow's hind quarter, and then sends him back out into the field, happily frolicking away. This is not how meat is created. The cow is killed. And so even if he had a free-range existence, it's still not cruelty-free. There's a level of violence in all meat products. So with that said, what do you really do? I say turn to a plant-based diet. It's not cruel to take a leaf off a plant or to harvest the roots of a carrot plant. It's not cruel to farm plants. You can put them in the ground with the seeds. You can let them grow. You can harvest them, save the seeds for the next generation. This is the way you pursue a plant-based diet. And you can do so in harmony with Mother Nature. Many of these plants are created as sources of nutrition. Whereas cows and mammals and living creatures certainly are not simply created just for us to consume their flesh. That's ridiculous. But plants are a completely different story. You can eat plants and you can replant them. Or you can eat part of a plant and it will regrow. A new leaf will appear where the one was that you took. So a plant-based diet is the answer to avoiding bad energy. And plants, by the way, do not have to be subjected to violence in order to harvest them and prepare them. When you're chopping lettuce for a salad, you aren't committing violence against that lettuce. You're just chopping it, putting it into little smaller pieces. There's no pain experienced by the lettuce. The lettuce isn't bleeding. It's not gasping for air like a mammal would be if you were chopping up a mammal. A plant is clearly created for nonviolent purposes, and one of those is for consumption. In fact, many people who are fruitarians believe that you should only eat fruits and nuts, because these are the things that are clearly provided by the plants for human consumption. You don't have to destroy the plant. You don't have to tear off a leaf or dig up a root. You can just eat the fruit or eat the nuts. These are the things that are abundantly provided by Mother Nature. And although I'm not personally a fruitarian, I think that's a really consistent belief. It's a very high integrity belief system to even avoid any potential of cruelty to plants. Just eat those things that the plant has clearly provided in abundance, such as fruits and nuts and seeds. So that's one way you can go about it. When you do that, you'll begin to notice that your own moods and your own energies begin to shift. If you used to be angry and fearful and violent, once you begin to follow a plant-based diet, you will become peaceful, confident, nonviolent, your moods will stabilize, and your conceptualization of the world, of reality, will expand. You'll no longer be limited to the fearful thinking of us versus them in war. You'll no longer be limited to the mainstream ideas that we see in America today. Vengeance, fear, control. Instead, you'll be able to expand your awareness. You'll be able to see the big picture. You will begin to take in more wisdom from nature. The plants actually give you wisdom. There's certain mushrooms that give you a whole lot of wisdom. By the way, reishi is one of them. It's a Japanese medicinal mushroom. People who eat a lot of reishi actually become wiser. And you might ask, why is that? Well, it's the same thing we already talked about. Just as the energy that's imprinted in the meat can impact your moods and your mind and your behavior, there's also information imprinted in plants. What kind of information? Wisdom. Wisdom of nature. There is information in light. And if you don't believe me, just go back and study physics. There's lots of information in light. How do you think we have fiber optic communications? It's all information by light. Well, a plant is exposed to that information during its entire life cycle. The light is on during the day and off at night, on and off, and there's varying colors of light and of information in that sunlight. There's all kinds of information in it, and the plant absorbs that information. A plant is said to be concentrated sunlight. The plant also absorbs the water. There's vibration in the water. There's imprinting of energy in all the water. And then the plant also creates its own technologies, you might say. It synthesizes its own nutrients to protect itself from the environment, to allow it to adapt. It has ways to be able to resist too much ultraviolet radiation or to go out and find more ultraviolet radiation if it needs more energy. A plant has ways to work with its neighbors. It even communicates with other plant family members. It's been proven in laboratories that plants can actually identify their own relatives. And they may emit chemicals to actually fight against the successful growth of non-relatives, thereby helping their own family members grow more successfully. So plants actually have very complex communication systems internally as well. Even though they don't have the consciousness of mammals, they do have a complexity in their information processing, in the way they process sunlight into energy, in the way they build their own medicines and build their own structures. They actually grab carbon right out of the air, and they use it to build structures. Did you know you can grow a plant without even using dirt? It's called hydroponics. I've done it myself. You can grow plants out of nothing but air, water, and a few nutrients. And I've grown okra and tomatoes out of nothing but air and water and a few vitamins. You say, well, where does the tomato come from if there's no dirt? Where did the plant come from? Where's the structure? Where did the cellulose come from? How did the plant create itself? The answer is it took it out of the air. It took mass and information, and it reorganized it. And it reorganized it into a harmonious structure. And it built its own solar system. Those were its leaves, so that it could gather energy. And then it transformed sunlight and carbon from the air into its own structure to build its own skeletal system, so to speak. And from that, it constructed its own support towers, which would be the stalks. And then from there, it created its own flowers, which also contain information to attract the pollinators. And when the pollinators arrived, it exchanged information with the pollinators. And from that, it began to create its own fruits, or in this case, tomatoes. And tomatoes, it's a whole universe of information right there. Inside, it has its own seeds full of new information, all the information that it needs to recreate itself. And a lot more on top of that. So when you eat that tomato, it is a fresh, organically grown, non-chemically treated tomato right off the vine. You are assimilating a massive amount of wisdom from Mother Nature. You are assimilating literally millions of years of wisdom and knowledge that's in the plant. And you're bringing that into your body and circulating it around all your tissues, and you're sending a little bit of that positive, creative vibe to each and every one of the cells in your body. Is it any wonder, then, that people who eat a plant-based diet are more peaceful, are more compassionate, able to see the bigger picture? They are far wiser, than those who subsist on a meat-eating diet. If awareness or spirituality were represented by money, meat eaters would be extremely impoverished people. Plant eaters would be the ultra wealthy. There's that much difference in the consciousness and the awareness of those who eat meat versus those who focus on a plant-based diet. That's why if you look at the history of every major religion on this world, throughout humanity, throughout the history of humanity, you will find that virtually every spiritually advanced individual, the leader of any religion you can name, promoted a plant-based diet. From Jesus Christ to Buddha, you name the person, or you name the God. It's a plant-based diet. And besides, is killing animals really consistent with any religion? I mean, every major religion teaches nonviolence, teaches compassion, understanding for other living systems, other beings. No religion teaches us to go out and kill other animals to take their flesh or to treat them with cruelty, to process them in a factory. In fact, it is anti-spiritual to eat meat. It is devolving your spirituality. It is lowering yourself to the level of a murderer. It's that vibration that you get when you eat meat. And that is, of course, why the meat eaters so easily support war. Because when something happens in our country, like the 9/11 event, they immediately get angry, they immediately want revenge, they immediately support violence. And those are exactly the wrong responses. And so now let me transition to the last part of this discussion, which is the future of human civilization. I believe the fact that we are able to treat animals with such cruelty today, we being modern human beings, is indicative of the way that we are capable of treating ourselves and each other. This is not just about cows or beef or mad cow disease. This is about ethics. This is about compassion. This is about living in a way that acknowledges the interconnectedness among all living systems. We could be talking about cows today, but tomorrow we might be talking about aquatic ecosystems, oceans, the rivers. We might be talking about the microbiology of our soils and the importance of saving our soils. We might even be talking about the genetic diversity in our plants. But you see, as long as we have human beings in our society and corporations that are willing to destroy all of these things in order to make money, as long as we tolerate that, then we are only accelerating our own destruction. I believe that no civilization can survive long term if it is acting out these predatory impulses, these desires to kill, to harm others in order to create personal gain. And if you look at what we are destroying in society today, it's not just the cows and the pigs and the animals. We are destroying our plant biodiversity through monoculture practices. We're destroying genetic diversity. We're actually destroying the sanctity of the genes, the sanctity of the seeds that have fed our ancestors for hundreds of thousands of years, because we are allowing genetically modified crops to be grown throughout North America. And those crops have already polluted the entire nation with DNA pollution. There's hardly a piece of soil that you could pick up anywhere in the country that does not have at least one fragment of genetically modified DNA in it right now. That's right, it's all polluted. And those DNA fragments could someday recombine. They could someday become a genetic catastrophe, so large that it destroys a huge portion of our food supply, or it destroys our ability to live in a sustainable way. And you see, all of these things have the same expressions in common, expressions of violence, expressions of taking life or killing or dominating or arrogance towards other living systems. And so what we do to the cows and what we do to the crops and what we do to the water and the air, those are the same things that we are indeed doing to ourselves. And I say that we cannot survive as a civilization if we stay on this path. There is no future for a civilization that is bent on such destruction. If we hope to have a chance at any kind of sustainable future on this planet, we've got to mature as a civilization. We have to grow up. We have to move past this predatory phase, and we have to move into a holistic worldview, a mindfulness that what we do to others is what we do to ourselves. Probably reminds you of a famous biblical quote, right? Do unto others. There's a lot of truth to that. But we have to get to that point if we are to survive. It's no longer a question of just being right or wrong. I think it's a question of survival. You see, this planet, this environment in which we live as guests, this Mother Nature, she is not judgmental, but she is the ultimate dispenser of karma. What we do to her, and to her creatures, and to her plants, and to her lands, it'll all come back to us. And if you add up what we've done, the accumulated cruelty, and arrogance, and experiments, meddling with seeds and genes, medicines, animals, and ecosystems, if you add all that up, oh, we're in for a world of hurt. The backlash is going to be just incalculable. We should all just hope for mercy, I'm telling you. If Mother Nature is unleashed against us, through a pandemic, through a blight affecting crops, through widespread global infertility, through the devastation of ocean food supply, the wiping out of fish or shrimp, or the loss of topsoils, through any of these things and many other things, if any of those happen, we are not going to make it. You will see a massive, massive collapse of the world population. And I didn't even mention the global water supply, the dwindling water tables. Didn't even mention many other things that are at stake here. Global population will collapse. We won't be wiped out. No, no. It will simply collapse to the point where it's now sustainable. The destruction that we cause today will determine the scope of the collapse of human population. What we unleash today will determine how many will be left. And so what you can do and what I can do right now to help save lives, to help save our future, is to begin thinking and living in a sustainable way right from this moment. Begin living that sustainable life as best you can. Even if you still live in a city, and even if you still drive a gasoline car, you can begin to make changes right now. You can choose a plant-based diet right now. And that is one huge step in the right direction. You will be greatly reducing your footprint on the planet. You'll be reducing CO2 emissions. You'll be helping to reduce the cruelty towards animals. You'll be enhancing your health, enhancing your awareness. You'll be supporting the small organic farmers that grow these foods that you'll be able to consume. you will be helping to shift things in the right direction so that more human beings can actually survive the backlash that's inevitably going to appear. It's not just about your own health. Even though that's a valid view, it's a very limited view. It's about planetary health and the sustainability of this entire civilization. If we are going to make it, we, as human beings, we've all got to start shifting. Shifting into a sustainable, green living lifestyle. And I can tell you right now that the eating of flesh from mammals, such as cows and pigs, is absolutely not compatible with sustainable life on this planet. Yeah, if we want to feed steak and hamburgers to everybody in the world, we can do that for a little while. We can cut down all the rainforest, turn it into grazing land, feed those burgers to everybody all over the world, and we can get away with that for a couple of generations. And then it's over. And then the global environment is so disrupted that rainfall patterns shift, weather patterns shift, oceans might begin to rise, superviruses will come out of the destabilized jungle ecosystems, they will emerge and spread. One way or another, population will be brought back into balance, and then meat consumption will go down. It's going to happen one way or another. We can either choose to do it consciously by shifting to a plant-based diet on a global scale, or we can wait around and let Mother Nature make that decision for us and experience a massive population collapse, which will bring us back into better balance with nature. Personally, I don't know about you, but I would prefer option number one. Let's shift now. Let's become compatible with this planet now. We're the guests here. Let's not destroy our home. It sounds almost so simple that you think, why even bother saying it? It is so simple, but so many people miss it. Miss the point. They go out and they buy a Prius, a hybrid car, and they think they're helping the planet, but they go order hamburgers and steak for lunch. False environmentalists, I call them. And you also, of course, have the false Christians out there who say they support nonviolence and say they're spiritual. But what they're doing, they're eating meat and junk food, processed foods, taking pharmaceuticals. They're destroying their own bodies, destroying the environment. False Christians. You have false environmentalists, false Christians. All kinds of false groups who claim to be doing something for the planet, but in their own actions and their individual day-to-day decisions, they are actually destroying the future, not conserving it. I encourage you to be someone who is congruent with the vision of the future of this planet. If you want our future to be sustainable, if you want to see life on this planet for more than just a couple generations, then I encourage you to act in congruence with that vision. That means avoiding the consumption of meat as much as possible, entirely if you can. It means consuming a plant-based diet. It means conserving energy. It means being healthy and avoiding the support of corporations that are destroying our planet and destroying our future. Means changing from within if you wish to change those things outside of you. Be the change, as Gandhi said. Be the change that you want to see in the world. Don't complain about violence against animals if you're still eating them. Eat plants. Be the change. And thanks for listening. I hope you've enjoyed this discussion. I'll leave you with a few more seconds of rainforest harmony brought to you by all of the insects and birds here in southern Ecuador. We're at an altitude of about 4,900 feet in the Andes Mountains. And I'll give you a few seconds to enjoy.